Before we start our episode today, I want to talk a little bit about a hard topic, fertility. If you are one of the many women struggling to become pregnant again, just know that we're thinking of you and sending you the most positive thoughts. For mamas trying to conceive or struggling with fertility, I encourage you to check out Needed. When the two founders of Needed began their fertility journey, they were shocked to see the lack of nutrition advice provided. Along with creating an amazing line of prenatal vitamins, omega-3s, and other essentials, they offer egg quality support for women and sperm plus for men. These are things that are not often talked about. I wanted to share more about both of those products. Needed's egg quality support is designed to support egg cell health as they develop into mature eggs. Improving egg quality can support fertility outcomes. It's never too early or too late to start focusing on egg quality, but for optimal results, they recommend taking egg support at least 3 months before trying to conceive or freezing the eggs. For Needed Sperm Support Plus, it combines targeted and clinically studied ingredients, pre and probiotics, antioxidants, and botanicals for the whole body approach to male fertility. Expertly formulated for men who are thinking of trying to conceive and for men's vitality at stages of all life. If you are pregnant or trying to conceive, or even in your postpartum stages, consider switching to Needed to get 20% off your order by using code VBAC20. That is thisisneeded.com and use code VBAC20 at checkout. Hello, hello, women of strength. It is Megan, and I am so excited to be recording with you today. You've probably been listening all summer, but I've actually not been in the recording studio all summer. I record up until May, until my kids get out of school, and then I kind of take June and July off so I can be with my kids and, you know, save you guys from the screaming and the dog barking and all of that in the background. So it's August and we're back in the studio and we have our friend Sabina. Hello.
Hello.
I'm so excited to have her on today, you guys. She is one of our VBAC certified doulas, which is so exciting. She is also a mama of three. She is a FBA2C. Mm-hmm. Hey guys, F. That's a new one, right? We haven't been sharing a lot of F. We've had H and V and breach B. So what does F stand for?
So F stands for free birth, which means I did not have any kind of provider with me during my pregnancy or during my birth. I just did it all by myself.
Yep, you did. Yeah. I want to, like, sometimes I feel like it's like mother-led mm-hmm. pregnancy, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
So, and you know, this is something we kind of talked about this a little bit before we got recording, like the world, when we look at free birth, frowns deeply upon.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not for everyone, right?
No,
and that's
not.
Why a good majority doesn't. However, mm-hmm. I really still think it's important to share these free birth stories. They are still beautiful stories. And it doesn't mean because you didn't have a provider that your story doesn't deserve to be heard, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that it's also important to talk a little bit about the fact that so many people are not getting the support. And you're going to tell us a little bit more of why you chose free birth.
Yeah.
But the world, as we know it, is not VBAC supportive in many ways, in
yes.
most ways.
Still.
Yeah, as we know. And you're in Canada, mm-hmm. Right? Canada?
Yep.
And we know that there's some hurdles there too.
Yeah.
Even here in Utah, over the last 10 years of me being a doula and having babies of my own, I've watched the VBAC support kind of wane. And actually wane in the less ideal way,
yeah.
Which is really unfortunate. So we have a lot of people who they try, you guys, they try and find the support. They try yeah. and get what they deserve, right? You deserve support. Women of strength, no matter who you are, where you are, you deserve support. And most people who choose to free birth, they run out of those options and decide that they're still going to do what they feel is best for them. And so that is what Sabina did. And I am excited for her to share her stories. We also have some other, in addition to free birth, we have some other little things in there. HELP syndrome. If you've ever heard of HELP syndrome, you guys, or if you haven't ever heard of HELP syndrome, we're going to talk more about that and what that looks like, the symptoms and things like that, and what it can mean. And then larger babies. And then, yeah, and then I want to talk a little bit more about VBAC doulas too, because we love our VBAC doulas. And I don't know, are you serving right now? You have a little babe, but you are okay. So if you're in Canada, and where are you again? In
I'm in Ottawa.
Ottawa. So you guys, give her a call. You can find her on our website at thevbacklink.com/findadoula, or what is your website?
Yeah, I don't have a website, but Instagram is at Let's Doula This Feedback. Pretty easy.
Let's doula this, and we are going to make sure to tag her. So just go to today's Instagram or Facebook and find her. But we do have a review of the week, so we'll jump into that and then get into your beautiful stories.
Thank you.
This story or this review is by Midaya. Midaya. I don't know. I think it's probably an abbreviation. I don't know. Maybe that's a name. But it says, I vote this plays on over the speaker in every OBGYN office. I love that. Says, I cannot even begin to describe what an encouragement these podcasts have been for me. I have completely binged on these in the past few weeks, and they have grown my confidence for my up and coming VBAC baby. I cannot stop sharing everything I am learning and even helping encourage first time moms on how to educate themselves to avoid a cesarean in the first place. Ding, ding, ding. We're actually going to have an episode about that, y'all. So if you're ready to share an episode with a first-time mom, it's coming up. Thank you so much for this no BS, truth-declaring and empowering platform that I know has encouraged so many more than just myself. Keep being amazing. I can't wait to share our story in just a few short months. All of my love. Oh, thank you so much for your review. And I hope that you had your VBAC and had a beautiful birth. And if you are still listening with us, let us know. Give us a shout out on my email or Facebook or Instagram. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, Miss Sabina, are you ready to dive into these beautiful stories?
I am.
Let's do it.
This is kind of surreal because, I mean, I've been picturing this whole pregnancy, picturing how I would talk about things if I was on a podcast. Like every time I had a symptom, like I thought about how I would say it on a podcast. So it's very cool to actually get to do it.
Yes, tell us all the things. Here you are.
Okay. So I'll start with my first birth. I was pregnant in 2019 and I had one appointment with an OB and then realized that it wasn't for me. And I switched to midwives and I had a perfectly uncomplicated pregnancy. I'm very athletic, so I was, you know, in shape, working out the whole time, no symptoms of anything like other than heartburn and some rib pain. And we had midwives who were great. And then around 41 weeks, actually on 41 weeks, like to the day, we had our ultrasound just to make sure everything was going well. And when we got there, I started getting a lot of pain in my right side. And again, I had had rib pain, so I just kind of like brushed it off. It's nothing. And I had seen my midwives the day before and everything looked good. Blood pressure was fine. So we were sitting in the waiting room and it just kind of kept getting more and more uncomfortable. I started sweating and I asked my husband if we could just step outside for a bit. And then I remembered one of my friends saying that when she was in labor, she would put her arms around her husband and just kind of like dangle just to like open everything. So I tried that, hoping it would like relieve some pressure. And I just kind of started panicking. And my husband, who was very naive at the time, was like, oh, this is it. Like, you're in labor. And I was like, no, this is not right. Like, it's not going
Yeah,
away.
something's
It's
off.
something's off. So we went back in and I asked the receptionist if I could just go lie down. So they brought me into a room. And at this point, like, I couldn't sit still. And then we called my midwife and she asked if I was like prone to panic attacks. And I said, no, I've never had one. And so they checked the baby, which, and he was totally fine. But my midwife was like, okay, I guess like I'll meet you at the hospital. So we called an ambulance. And this is where it starts to get fuzzy. Like I was in shock. Like I couldn't remember everything, but took an ambulance. And the only reason I took an ambulance is because I thought they would help, but they didn't do anything. They just waited until we got to the hospital. But I spent the ride on my hands and knees. And when we got to the hospital, my blood pressure was 275 over like 174. And again, we had just checked it the day before and like it was totally normal, like, 121 over 80. My midwife was there and they asked if they could check my cervix just to see if like maybe it was some
What's
sort of
going
bizarre
on?
labor. And I was like barely, like I think I was maybe a centimeter, still very posterior. So like nothing was really happening. I do remember my mom quickly poking her head in. She like my husband must have called her, but then they were like, okay, let's do a C-section. So I don't remember a lot. I remember as soon as they gave me the epidural, I could like relax, like everything just went away. I briefly like remember seeing my husband and being like, oh my God, we're gonna have a baby. I remember hearing him cry. Like they showed him to me the first time. I also had a cyst on one of my ovaries, so they showed me that. Like it was kind of cool. And then in the recovery room, I very briefly remember trying to feed my son. And then I told them that my vision was jumping around and like I couldn't focus. So they handed him over to my husband. And then I don't remember anything else. So basically, they never treated my blood pressure. They
Wait,
just, yeah,
they didn't do anything. They just
they didn't
like,
do
we gotta
anything.
get this baby out type thing, and then ignored the blood
Even
pressure
though, yeah, even though,
astronomically high.
yes, even though the
Okay.
baby was fine, like, because we had just gone to the ultrasound, they checked everything. They, yeah, just completely neglected the blood pressure. And obviously, it dropped when I got the epidural because it gets rid of the pain. So it goes down a bit. And later, I found out that they had the medication ready. They just never gave it to me. So as soon as the epidural wore off, my blood pressure shot right back up and ended up having a seizure. So my husband, I mean, I don't remember any of it, but my husband was like kicked out into the hall, like shirtless, holding our newborn, not knowing what's going on. My parents were down the hall and like heard the code blue and just like knew it was for me. And then I was just talking to my mom about it yesterday. She said that like they were at the nurse's station demanding to know what was going on, and they were telling her to calm down, and they just kind of like sent them to see my husband. And he was in like a dark room by himself with a newborn who was like crying because it was probably, he probably wanted to eat or whatever. And he just like looked like he was like a ghost, like didn't know what was going on. It was horrible. Like it's still like, even to this day, like it hurts knowing that that was his entrance into parenthood.
And both of your experiences too.
Yeah,
Like his
exactly.
entrance, both of your experience. It didn't
Yeah.
start off very
Yep.
positive.
No, definitely not. So I remember like seeing my dad briefly, and then I don't remember anything until the next day. And I woke up and my dad was there, and I just said what happened. And he told me like I had a seizure. And then the first couple days, like I don't remember much. My son was in the NICU just because I couldn't take care of him. And they would bring him to me once in a while so I could feed him. And then my mom said she noticed that every time he was with me, my blood pressure would drop, obviously, like makes sense. So she advocated for him to get to stay with me. So I started breastfeeding, even though I was like honestly half dead. They told my family the day it happened that the next 24 hours would kind of determine which direction I went. So it was pretty
My
scary.
gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty scary. So we ended up getting like a private room in the ICU, and my son was allowed to stay with me as long as somebody else was there. So my mom and husband just kind of kept switching off. And the nurses were phenomenal. Like every nurse we had was great. They
Good.
brought us a full cart of like baby supplies because we had nothing. Like we didn't even have a hospital bag. But I saw every other person in the hospital. It was incredibly frustrating. We saw residents, we saw like random specialists who had nothing to do with me. We saw, I don't know, interns. I never saw the same doctor twice, and I was there for a week. So
Whoa.
we kept being told by one doctor that, like, okay, if your blood pressure stays below this level for the next 24 hours, you get to go home. And then the next day, a doctor would come on, and I was like, okay, it's stayed below. Like, can we go home? And they were like, oh, no, like, you're probably here for another several days. And it was just back and forth like that. And it was incredibly frustrating. So eventually, I left against medical advice because I knew I couldn't heal in the hospital. Like, I knew I needed to go home. And so we went home with two blood pressure medications. And by day two, I had to stop taking them because my blood pressure was so low. So it was obviously I made the
Whoa.
right choice. Yeah, it got to the point where like I could hardly get out of bed because it was like I was so lethargic because of the blood pressure being so low.
My gosh, yeah, your body truly was responding to it was in that like light fight, fight and flight mode where you're like probably like so tense the whole time you were there, your body was not able to even try and recover.
And I mean, like, that was our first week as parents, was just in the hospital. Eventually, we got moved to like the labor and delivery ward, but still, like, we're not home, we're not comfortable, like, we're bored because we're just like, and then we're seeing everybody and their uncle at the hospital coming in just because I was a unique case. So, super frustrating. I do want to mention that, like, with the HELLP syndrome, so my kidneys were failing, I had swelling in my brain, I had to get one MRI and two CTs, or the other way around. I'd only remember one of them.
Your
But
liver,
yeah, it was,
obviously,
liver was definitely
which
not
was
ideal.
the start of that pain.
Again, I thought that was the rib pain, but because I
Kind
was
of up
perfectly
there.
healthy. I was perfectly healthy. Like I had worked out that morning and like felt totally fine. So it was very sudden
Did you
that
have
I.
any other symptoms like headache, blurred vision, swelling, nausea?
Not until after that
Oh,
pain.
okay.
So
Oh,
like
okay.
after the C-section, that's what my vision was like jumping.
Yeah, you
Like
said you were,
I couldn't focus. And then the next few days, like right here on my head, like the right side was just like
pounding.
severe pain and nothing would help. Like they were giving me pain meds and stuff and nothing was helping. So eventually I just stopped taking them. But beforehand, there was absolutely nothing. Like they didn't test my blood or urine because it wasn't routine to check it at that time, and we had no reason to check it, but it was very, very sudden and very severe. And because they didn't deal with the blood pressure, I still wonder to this day if they had dealt with it or at least tried
Give any magnesium or something.
something, if it wouldn't have been as severe of a
Severe.
reaction or like a problem. So it's very frustrating to look back. And of course, after that, I had PTSD.
I'm sure.
But I didn't know that I had PTSD and the support wasn't really there. Like my midwife was like, oh, of course, like you're gonna have some hard times, whatever. But like that was kind of it. That was the only support I got. And my sister actually was pregnant at the same time and was due a month later. And she got induced because she just went past her due date. And I was so upset when she was in labor because I was so jealous. And it's like a horrible feeling because you're happy for them, but like I was just so jealous. And my midwife came over that day. And again, like wasn't really much support surrounding that. It was just like, yeah, that's normal. And just like move on. So my sister ended up getting a C-section just because she got the cascade of interventions and, you know, typical story. But for the next year, it was extremely difficult mentally. And anytime I would try to talk to somebody about it, it was always the like, well, you have a healthy baby. So, you know, trying to like justify that everything was worth it because the baby's healthy. And then like again, I didn't tell my family how much I was struggling. But anytime, like, for example, I would talk to my mom about it and be like, I missed all those first moments with him, like the first night, like I wasn't with him at all. She would always say something like, well, he was taken care of, because she was there, which like I'm super grateful that they were there, but it would like crush me
Like,
inside
but not by
because
me.
yeah, it should have been me. All of those moments should have been me. And then towards my son's first birthday, we were talking about his birthday party, and again, my sister did not mean anything by this because she just didn't know what I was going through. But she was like, well, you didn't really give birth, so we'll call it his removal day. And like, I just played it
Oh,
off like it was fine, but like my
that would
insides just
impact me.
crumbled.
That just made me like, gave me a little bit of an ick. And I'm sure like she didn't
No, she didn't
mean any
understand at
harm by
all.
that, right? But like, that just gave me like a ugh,
Yeah, I
feeling of
know.
like, no.
Yeah. And so like I just kind of like would play these things off, like, smile and nod sort of thing, but like inside it just like crushed me, 'cause I
I'm
was
so
just
sorry.
I never thought that I would have a C-section, right? Like you just don't think that's going to happen to you. So his first birthday was like really hard, and then after that I just started like looking forward to the next one, which like was good, but also not good because I didn't really do any healing or recovering. I just kind of like was like, okay, it's done, let's move on.
We're going to take a quick break to continue talking about fertility. I know many of our beautiful women of strength listening join us right after their cesarean birth. And when you're in your postpartum stages, many of your nutrition needs actually increase. And if you're thinking about having another baby, I invite you to take a moment to educate yourself on the support that our favorite prenatal supplement Needed offers for both fertility and postpartum. When the two founders of Needed began their fertility journey, they were shocked to see the lack of nutrition advice provided. Along with creating an amazing line of prenatal vitamins, omega-3s, and other essentials, they offer eggs quality support for women and sperm support for men. Again, this is not something we often talk about. Male fertility impacts conception and a healthy pregnancy, and it is in decline due to stress, toxins, aging, and other lifestyle factors. Hormone and gut health of your partner directly influences sperm quantity and quality, and ultimately the DNA passed from sperm to baby. I love that Needed not only thinks about the female fertility, but also about the male fertility. Needed does an amazing job thinking about and supporting us women through the fertility journey. They offer prenatals, omega-3s, antioxidant, rich in egg quality support supplements, and it is formulated by prenatal health practitioners to help you and your eggs thrive. You are born with all of your egg cells, or oocytes. And the oocyte takes 3 to 4 months to mature before ovulation. Needed egg quality support is designed to support egg cell health as they develop into mature eggs. Improving egg quality can support fertility outcomes, and it's never too early or too late to focus on egg quality. So we hope you can check out thisisneeded.com and enjoy 20% off with code VBAC20. Again, that is VBAC20 at thisisneeded.com. Back to today's show.
So my second birth was in 2021, and it was more of like a classic unsupportive provider scenario. I went with the same midwife because she was amazing during our first birth, and I had a lot of trust with her, but she told me I had to see high risk as well. So I went to see the high risk doctor, and he did not want to see me. He just was like, you're pretty low high risk because it happened so late in your pregnancy. Like, take baby aspirin. Maybe get some extra ultrasounds. We don't need to see you. So I was like, great, that's perfect. Like, I don't care. But my midwife was like, nope, you need to keep seeing him every month if you want to like continue with us, which is kind of a
Was
red
that
flag.
protocol of like their staff and like the process, or was that just her opinion, like giving her comfort of you seeing an OB?
Yeah, I think it was her comfort.
Okay.
And because she said then if something did happen, we had him on hand, sort of thing.
Okay.
So I still wanted a home birth. I wanted a home birth with my first. Obviously, it didn't happen. And so I still was like totally comfortable. I knew it wasn't going to happen again. Like we were going to take every precaution. But my midwife was just like, no, it's too risky. Like because you're a VBAC and you had that happen, we can't support you in a home birth. So again, like, I didn't know all the red flags at this time, and I just trusted her too much to, think otherwise. So I pretty much left every midwife appointment crying because anytime I had like tried to be positive and been like, okay, well, if I can't deliver at home, I'll deliver at this hospital. They'd be like, no, you can't deliver at that hospital. You have to go to like one of the higher level hospitals. And those are the ones where I stayed in the ICU for like a week. So I didn't want to go there.
Triggering.
Yeah. And that's where I had to go to the high risk too. So I was going there once a month and then like 2 to 3 times a month towards the end to this hospital where we had like been through all this trauma.
Yes.
And eventually, like I just asked if I could do the phone call or the appointments over the phone because you'd get the ultrasound and then you'd have to wait 2 to 3 hours to see the doctor because they were always so behind. So I was just like, can I just like, I check my blood pressure at home. Can I just call you or can you just call me? So that was fine, made it much easier. So yeah, eventually my midwife said that if like everything was fine by a certain point, she would talk to the OB at the hospital that I wanted to deliver at and see what they thought. So ultimately they said I had to transfer to OB care if I wanted to deliver there. It was stupid. Again, another red flag. And I had to be induced and yada yada yada. All these like stipulations and everything
Yeah.
had to be like what they needed. So we saw the OB once and I did not, we were like in and out in like 5 minutes. I did not like it. Like she could not have cared less about me. Like it was very obvious. And my midwife said that like starting at 38 weeks, we should try and do stretch and sweeps every like few days to get things going before my due date. So like so
She
much
really wanted you to have a
pressure.
baby before that 41-week mark.
Yes, exactly. She was more scared than we were. Like even my husband wasn't as scared and
Use
he's like a
it.
very anxious person. So yeah, she started doing the stretch and sweeps. And again, like I should have refused, but you don't know what you don't know at that point. And I found the VBAC link when I was like 37 weeks. So I wish I had found it earlier so that I could have like done the course, seen all these red flags and kind of like, you know, taken things into my own hands. So eventually we kept going in to get induced, but we got sent home because there was no bed. So again, I was like, why are we doing this then? Like, I'm obviously not high on their priority list. So eventually we went in, they broke my water, waited to see if anything happened, and nothing did. And then they started Pitocin. And for like the first 6 hours on Pitocin, I was like able to handle it. But my husband and I were so uncomfortable in the hospital room, like mentally, physically, emotionally, like we just did not want to be there. We were never in the room alone. So like we couldn't really like be ourselves because there were always strangers there. And eventually I asked for the epidural. And I had told my midwife that if I asked for the epidural, try everything else first. Then do the epidural. And as soon as I asked for the epidural, she was just like, okay, let's do it. Like, no pushback, nothing. So that was super frustrating as well. So I got the epidural. And then, like, 2 hours later, a different OB came in, checked me, and was like, no, you're not dilating. It's not working. You need a C-section. And again, I didn't know this at the time, but like, she said there was no progress, but I had dilated a centimeter, had fully effaced, and like, yeah, fully. Yeah, not just like a little bit, like fully effaced.
If everybody could see my face right now, I'm like, what?
I
That's not change of progress.
know. And then my cervix had come forward too. So, like,
Big changes all
big
around.
changes, big changes. Just not fast enough for this doctor. And so, like, I knew it wasn't necessary. I waited for my midwife to come in and like fight for me. And she just like went along with it. And I was like, what? Like, no. And then again, I didn't know I had the right to just say, like, no, I'm not doing
No.
that. And neither did my husband.
And even
So
though you had the right, it's still very hard.
it's
It's a
very
very
hard.
difficult thing to be like, actually, no, I've got two medical professionals here telling me that this is what I should do. And I think no, but how do I say that?
Yeah. And you're already like in such a vulnerable
Vulnerable.
state. And like, then there's all that negative energy too, which like affects. It really affects me. Like I'm a highly sensitive person, so energies really affect me. And like
But
as soon
you were
as,
proof in your first birth, too.
yeah, exactly. As soon as that doctor walked in, I could feel that negative energy. Like I knew she didn't care about me. Like she wasn't in this job for the right reasons. So like I bawled, and my husband tried to comfort me, and he was like, "It's gonna be different. We're gonna remember everything. Like we know what's happening this time." And I just kept saying, like, yeah, but we don't need it. Like, the baby's fine. I'm fine. Like, it's just not necessary. So, anyway, eventually, like, we had the C-section, and I just, like, laid there on the table sobbing. I did obviously remember everything, but I was just miserable. And I was, like, pumped full of every drug. So I was exhausted. And I think it really affected the bonding experience between me and my baby. Like that first night with my son, like I wanted him constantly. I wanted him on me. I didn't want anybody to take him. With her, I just like wanted her to sleep separately so that I could sleep, which is very unlike me. So I really think the like all the Pitocin and everything kind of blocked my natural hormone releases. And while I was lying on the table, like my husband and the baby got taken away to the recovery room and I was just like trying to rest. The OB was like, "So do you want more kids?" And I was like, "Yeah." She was like, "Well, they'll all have to be C-sections." While I was laying on the table, like after sobbing that whole time. So it was just like horrible.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I do because I want to point out to everyone that there are, especially if you are a provider listening and you perform C-sections, please, please hear what we are saying today. What you say to us while we are on the table in the most vulnerable position, some of us strap down to a table, right? Like in this position, what you say to us impacts us. Every word that comes out of your mouth, please think about it. Please think about it because it impacts us and it impacts us longer. Like I'm like getting emotional because I'm remembering my provider talking crap like that, saying things like that. It impacts us longer than you will ever know. Will ever know, and it will impact us for every future birth. So please, providers, please, 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 from the bottom of my heart, I beg of you, watch what you say to people. Okay, sorry. Keep going.
That's okay. I totally agree with you. Like the lack of bedside manner, especially for VBACs, because like when you've
Oh.
gone through a C-section, like, even if it was planned, whatever, it still can be traumatic. And
Yes.
like they just don't get it. She even told me, she was like, "I had three C-sections. Like once your baby's out, you won't care how it happened." And it's like, good for you, but like not everybody is the same as you. Like maybe you don't
I
care about birth
know.
experiences, but like lots of women do.
I
So it's
know.
just, ugh, super frustrating.
Yeah.
So we left after, like, we stayed one night in the hospital and then left. And of course, the PTSD came back. The midwives all tried to tell me, like, that the C-section was necessary because her hands were up over her face. So, like, she wouldn't have come out anyway. But, like, their stories weren't the same. So I kind of realized that they were lying and were just trying to, like, justify that it was necessary.
Yeah, which is
So,
unfortunate.
yeah. So yeah, the PTSD came back and it kind of got to a point. I can't remember how many months my daughter was, but I was like visiting with a neighbor and I was talking about my experiences and like I told her, I was like, "Yeah, next time I'm having a VBAC, I'm gonna do whatever it takes to have a VBAC." And she was like, "Why would you even try that?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" She was like, "Well, like there's the risk of rupture, so why would you even want to try that? Like it seems kind of dumb to do that when you can just have a C-section." And like it broke me. So like I came home, bawled to my husband, and a few days later I was still like really upset about it. And he didn't know how to help, which like is fair. And he was just like, "Well, maybe you need to see like a therapist." And like I'm sure there are some out there, but like I couldn't find any that like fit here. And therapy is not something that I thought would help me. I know it helps lots of people. So I started looking up my symptoms and things and found out that it was PTSD and like it got to a point where I was like, okay, I need to fix this for myself. So I took the VBAC Link course, which already was super helpful just because I felt empowered going forward. Like I knew that my potentially both C-sections weren't necessary, but definitely the second one. I knew the risks and like the benefits of having a vaginal birth after two C-sections. Like I had all the proof in front of me. And then it also pushed me to become a doula. I've always wanted to like be in the birth world. I became a nurse to work in obstetrics, but then left nursing after like 4 years because it just wasn't for me. So I was like, you know what? This is what I'm meant to do. Like, I wish I had known about doulas for my other two births. So I took a doula course and then I took the VBAC Link doula course. And within like a month of starting my doula page, I already had a VBAC client who reached
Yay.
out, which was super exciting. So she got in with the midwives that I had, with the particular midwife that I had.
Oh.
And I was like, okay, like maybe this is a good thing. Maybe I can like teach her about VBACs. And the first appointment, she was great, apparently. And then after that, it was constantly like, well, like you have this. So like maybe we should do a hospital birth, you know, or you have this. Every time she saw them, they were trying to push her towards a hospital birth. So she ended up having a free birth with me,
She
which was
did.
very cool. Yeah.
Really?
So I told her from the get-go, like, if that's something you want, I'm here for you. Like, I'm totally comfortable with that. And her original plan was to just maybe not call the midwives unless she felt something was wrong. But then after some of those appointments, she was like, no, they're not coming. Like, we're not calling them. If we need help, we'll just go to the hospital. So yeah, she had a free birth, and it was awesome. And it was great for me to like be there. I was 14 weeks pregnant at the time. So it was great for me. And then I actually met my doula a year before we even tried to conceive because I wanted to be prepared. And she wasn't a VBAC doula, but she was like newer and very open to the like idea of having a home birth after C-sections. And we became friends to the point where I actually attended her birth 3 months before she attended mine. So it's
Oh
very
my gosh, so
cool.
cool.
Yeah. So when I got pregnant with this one, I pretty much knew right away that I was just not going to have a provider. Like there was just no way. I knew it wasn't for me. I did apply to the midwife groups, but every single one of them either refused or said I was on the wait list. But like I wasn't. They, as soon as they saw that I wanted a home birth after two C-sections, like I was just kind of thrown
No.
out. Yeah. So I mentioned it to my husband once, and then the second time I mentioned it, he was like fully on board, which is amazing.
Really? 'Cause you said
Yeah.
he was like
He's an anxious
maybe
person.
anxious about things.
But like I had been educating him along the way too, like everything that I learned. And anytime I told him stories of other women who had like difficult births or like my client who was like having these horrible appointments, he would get angry too. So like, yeah, he really had like become pretty educated on the topic, which was amazing. And like he was very comfortable with our doula as well. He was like, you know, she's really knowledgeable. We had a plan in place for like if there was an actual emergency, if I wanted to transfer for whatever other reason. So we had everything set up. And then, I mean, most of the things I felt like I could just handle myself unless it was one of the very few like serious emergencies. So my mindset going into this birth was like amazing. I read daily affirmations to myself like before bed, and then I would listen to her heartbeat. I could hear it with a stethoscope around like maybe 15 weeks. So every night I would listen to her heartbeat, and I just felt like so connected and so in tune with like my body and my intuition, which was something that like kept getting shut down with my other births I found. So it was like the most stress-free pregnancy. Like we didn't do any tests. We got a couple ultrasounds just because I like seeing the baby and like I'm a very visual person, but that was it. And it was just me, both me and my husband were like, this has been amazing. Like, we're just living our lives normally and not having the stress of like stipulations and like all these worries being pushed on us. I was checking my blood pressure, but like, I just eventually was like, I don't really feel like I need to do this. It was very low. It was like 90 over 50 for most of the pregnancy. So I was like, I'm fine. I was still taking the aspirin just as a precaution. But yeah, that was it. And like, I wasn't in a rush. I wasn't like, the baby has to be out by a certain time. It was just like, let's just let things happen because we didn't get that opportunity in the last two. So I had my mucus plug start to come out around like 39 weeks, 4 or 5 days, which was very exciting. But I told my husband, I was like, doesn't really mean much. Like, things are just moving the way they should. And then a couple of days later, the bloody show came out as well. And again, I was like, we're fine. Like, this could be going on for weeks, whatever. And then that night, so it was actually the morning of my due date, I had prodromal labor. So I started feeling contractions. And like, of course, I got excited, but I just like, it was like started, I think, 4 in the morning. I just like sat there and like breathed through them, kind of practiced. They weren't intense, like very easy to get through. And then me and my husband like got everything ready when he got up, and then like it stopped. So I was like, okay, whatever. My body's just practicing. And then for the next week or so, mucus plug kept coming out like throughout the week, just in little bits. And I didn't have any other contractions until I have it written down here. The night of July 3rd into the morning of July 4th. So like probably like 10 hours. I had prodromal labor overnight and then it stopped as soon as I got up in the morning. And I found like I tried doing the mouth circuit and both times it stopped the contractions. So I was like, okay, whatever. Like at least I know how to stop them.
Yeah, and sometimes mild circuit does stop them because a lot of the times prodromal is a positional thing, right? Baby's trying to figure it out. And so mild circuit helps with position. So if it moves baby, it can stop them.
So I was a little bit frustrated that day because I was like, like I'm losing sleep now. Like I don't know if I should rest during the day because I still could be weeks away from giving birth. So I just like, I was like, we need to stay busy. We need to have plans for every day just to like, so I don't feel like
Take your
I'm
mind
like
off of it.
rushing. So yeah, we kept busy that day. And then like we were sitting after dinner around 8 p.m. I started feeling them again. And I was like, oh, great. Like another night of no sleep. I was like, hey, whatever. And so the second night I had them, they were like stronger than that first time, but I could still breathe through them and like stay lying down. And then this night they were even stronger, which is odd because usually prodromal labor like is kind of the same.
Yeah, it's kind of monotone and just kind of stays.
But these ones, like I couldn't lay down, which was really frustrating because I was so tired. So I had to keep like getting up. I tried again, I tried doing the mouth circuit and it didn't help. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm just gonna stay awake all night. I turned on the TV. And then in the morning, I got up and I was like waiting for them to stop. And I tried having a hot shower. They were still going. And it's like 10 o'clock in the morning at this point. And the other ones had always stopped around like 8. So I was like, okay, like maybe this is
Maybe,
something. So my husband was like, okay, well, like get Jess, who's our doula. He was like, get Jess here. And I was like, well, I'm fine though. Like, I don't need the help. But I texted her to let her know what was going on. And then for my husband's sake, told her to come because I knew he needed that like comfort. So we called her and we called our friend who was going to come, like just kind of watch the kids. And for the whole day, I was contracting and dealing with it beautifully. Breathing through it, no problem. I was excited every time I got a contraction. I wasn't timing them because I found that was stressing me out because I like felt like they needed to be a certain length and a certain, time apart. So I stopped timing them. And it was just really nice. Like our friend was like taking the kids swimming and like me and my doula were just kind of mulling around the house and she would play with the kids too. And it was just like we were all hanging out and it was like so peaceful. And then around like 4, she does reflexology, my doula. So she got me to lay down and did some like acupressure stuff on my feet. And while she was doing that, I had like a really big contraction. And then after that, they kind of stayed. I'm pretty sure that was the shift into active labor.
Increased it.
So my husband made everybody dinner, which was nice. And I was just kind of like in the kitchen picking at the food while going through contractions. Eventually, the kids went to bed. And our friend left. And at this point, it was probably like 8 o'clock at night. I had the TENS machine on. I had been like going back and forth from the toilet because the toilet's the dilation station. So anytime I had to go to the bathroom, I'd stay there for like 4 or 5 contractions. Again, I was still like fully in control, like mentally fully aware, like happy in between contractions. And so around 9:30, I decided to get in the tub because they were still increasing. And my husband and doula were both there. And it was just, my husband and I really got to connect during this labor. And he was so present. And I had asked him after my previous births if he was proud of me. He was like, oh, I don't know if I would say proud. And like, he didn't mean it negatively, but like, it just like hurt that he wasn't, So throughout this labor, anytime I looked at him, he'd tell me how proud he was of what I was doing, or he'd like tell me how amazing I was. And it was just so nice. Like he could hold me, we could just be ourselves without like feeling the pressure of people watching. So then around like I think 10:30, transition hit. And I struggled. I was so mentally tired because I hadn't slept in, this was my third night of no sleep. And my mental strength had been like what was keeping me going the rest of the time. So yeah, I was struggling and it lasted 3.5 hours. So it was a long transition. And of course I had the moments where like, I can't do this. Like you know, I'm not strong enough, whatever. And my doula just went, okay, if that's how you feel, then we need to talk about the alternative. And that just like, I was like, no, shut it down. Like, I can do this. We're not going anywhere. So that was great. Like, all she needed to say was that one thing. So I felt my water break at like 12:30, which was amazing because I never felt that before. And it kind of gave me that like push. And then a couple contractions later, my body started pushing on its own. Again, amazing. And it was very intense. And like, I just couldn't stop it. Like, every time I got a contraction, I couldn't stop myself from pushing. So I just went with it. And I could feel her. Like, I reached up inside me. I could feel her head around like 140-ish, which was like, oh my God, so incredible. Like, how cool is that? So a couple of contractions later, I could feel her crowning. And my husband, like, I kind of sat up and my husband was like, oh my God, I see the hair. And he was like so excited. It was adorable. And it took me like another probably 20 minutes to get her head out. And I had a lot of like pressure in my back and on my right side. So I was like, maybe she's posterior. Like, I didn't know. So once her head came out, she wasn't posterior. Like,
Was
she
she
was,
kind of looking sideways a
I
little?
think she was asynclitic. Because
Asynclitic.
all the pain was on the right, and I ended up tearing only on the right side. So I'm pretty sure she was kind of crooked, and her head wasn't really coned either. So I'm assuming that's what my guess, anyway.
Coming down a little
Yeah.
wonky.
So her head was out. I got to feel her. Like, we didn't know the gender of this one either, which was very exciting. We were like 99% sure it was a boy. And so I kept referring to her as it. So, like, oh, you know, like, I can feel its ear, like it's turning. I felt her turn too, which was cool. And then my doula took videos. In the video, right before she came out, I said, she's all gooey, which like is crazy to me because I thought it was a boy, but in the moment said she. So like, very
That
cool.
is
I'm
crazy.
pretty sure that was all intuition. So I had about like a 3.5 minute break between when her head came out and then the next contraction. And then on the next contraction, I pushed like 3 or 4 times, felt her come out, sat back, and got to like pull her up to my chest. And I just like looked to my husband and I was like, we did it. We did it. Like, she's here. And his reaction was everything. Like, he just like, I don't think he realized she was out because I had been like moving around. So when I sat back, I think he thought I was just readjusting. And then all of a sudden I pull her out and he just like, huge smile on his face, like put his hands on his face because he just couldn't believe it. And it was like he started bawling, and it was just like, oh my God, incredible. And she cried like the second I took her out of the water, she kind of squawked and then, you know, was moving around and everything. And it was just like the best moment of my life. It was everything. And even though like it felt like a dream because I was so tired, and of course, you're like kind of in shock that this actually happened, but it was incredible. Like, she was totally healthy. I got to feel her cord pulsing. I didn't even get to see the placentas with the other two, even though I wanted to. So then we just like stayed in the tub for a bit. I was extremely sore. Like, once that initial high wore off, I was like, holy crap, like
I just
my
had a
crotch.
baby.
Yeah. And I was like, my crotch hurts. So my husband ran the other tub for us. Oh, and we got to see the gender too, which was super fun and a big shock to both of us. So I got up to switch over to like our shower tub, and I was like, oh, there's a little bit of pressure. And I just kind of like grunted, and the placenta came out. And again, which was very cool because I didn't get to experience that the other two times. So we went to the other tub, and I got to like do the placenta tour myself. I got to like let her latch by herself, which I love those videos of babies like finding the nipple themselves. So I let her do that. And she was like coated thickly in vernix, like for a 41-week baby, like super thick, which was, I think, intentional for me because I always wanted that like gooey baby. And she was like extremely gooey.
Gooey.
So I have photos, it's like all over my face, all over my nose, like just everywhere. Yeah. And then we transferred to the bed. We got to like cut the cord. I made a little cord tie because I hate those plastic chip clip
Clamps.
things. So I made her like a cord tie, and I got to put that on. And when the kids woke up in the morning, they just got to come in the bedroom and she was there. So it
Oh
was
my
like the
gosh.
best. My doula was great. Like, she did counter pressure and like she helped my husband anytime he was having moments of like panic. Like at one point I said, like, what's taking so long? Is she stuck? And that's like his trigger. Like, for some
Oh,
reason, he's terrified of the babies getting
being
stuck.
stuck. Yeah.
So you could see in the video, he just like looks over to my doula all panicked. But I didn't know because she just like calmed him down without me knowing, which was great. And I did tear. So when I was in the tub, I looked down and saw something kind of like floating. And I was like, oh, is that just like some gunk? But it was like a piece of my inner labia that had kind of like ripped off. So
So what
I
did
knew I
you do
needed.
about that? Did you just let it heal naturally? Did you do the super glue thing?
I've never heard of the super glue thing, but I would have tried
Yes. Oh, yes, super
that.
glue. I there are
Okay,
some
good to
midwives
know.
here in Utah, birth center and home birth midwives, that when there's a little bit more tear that would maybe say like we need to like do some stitches, but like not too bad, they actually super glue it.
Okay,
If it's something that's
interesting.
it's just pretty minor, but still like they
Yeah.
super glue it because they
I
said
had
it.
originally, sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say they just say that it causes more trauma to put like needle in, needle in,
Yeah.
needle in.
Yeah. And I had originally like told myself if I tore that I would just let it heal, but this like I
Too
couldn't actually
much.
figure out where it attached to. Like we even got a mirror and we're trying to figure out like where it had actually ripped off of. So I was like, you know what, we're gonna have to go in. So we went to, there's a really small hospital about 20 minutes from us. We went to the emergency room and just told them like, I just gave birth. I don't have midwives. I need to be stitched up. And so they sent us up to the OB unit. And the doctor really took his time and like he stitched up everything, like every little tear that he saw, which I didn't really want, but I didn't really know any different. And at one point I asked him, like, how many stitches are you putting in? And he was like, well, like you've kind of got like a zigzag tear up, like that was part of it. And then beside my urethra, he's like, so I'm trying to fix it, but I'm also trying to make it look aesthetically pleasing. So I was like, okay, like I appreciate that. I want it to look decent afterwards. So we did have some issues with her. Like they wouldn't leave her alone, even though we didn't want her looked at. There was one doctor in particular who just really caused a lot of problems for us and like threatened to call child services and stupid stuff like that.
What?
Yeah, in hindsight, I would have just let them call child services because like she was perfectly healthy and they would have come here. They did end up coming here even after we did what they wanted. And she was like, why am I here? Like, this is so unnecessary and such a waste of my time. So, in hindsight, that's what we would have done. But anyway, the stitching was fine. And then we came home and yeah, I healed. The stitches were like the most uncomfortable or like sore part. Everything else, like, I healed relatively quickly. I was back to working out at like just after 2 weeks, which I know is really quick, but like,
That was
that's
really
just
quick.
me. Like I did that
You
after
felt really
C-sections
good.
too. Yeah. I did after the C-sections too. I was back around 2 weeks. Light stuff. Like obviously I worked my way up. I didn't just go back into like intense stuff. But my husband even said like it was the best experience of his life and he would gladly do that again over what we had been through. So it was amazing. It was
Oh,
amazing.
I'm
Yeah.
so happy for you. I can see
Thank
the
you.
joy. I can see this cute little one right here. Oh
Thank
my goodness. I am so happy for you. And I'm
you.
happy that you had that support. Like you had your team. You even had like support for your kids. All you had everything planned out. And I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. I should point out too that she was our biggest baby.
Was she?
So our other two were 6 pounds, 14 ounces, and
Okay.
she was 8 pounds, 5 ounces. So,
Okay,
yeah,
that's like,
of course.
that's definitely a lot bigger of a baby. So I wanted to talk about that too. Like, it's actually going to be in another episode, but we're talking about big babies. Like, did people ever like comment on like your pregnancy? Like, oh, and like, did that ever impact you? Like, oh my gosh, maybe I could have too big of a baby, like too big of a baby, right?
I honestly instinctively knew it was going to be our biggest baby because
Really?
I knew I was going to deliver vaginally. You know, like the other two, their heads were like fifth percentile, like they would have just slid out, sort of thing. But just like I knew it was going to be challenging. And I knew I was just meant to have like the most challenge that I could, basically. She was very fluid filled. So like she lost over 1 pound after birth. Like she dropped down to like 7, low sevens. So I don't know if the vernix had anything to do with that, but I looked the exact same as the other two pregnancies, maybe even smaller. Like it just kind of looked like I had a soccer ball stuffed up my shirt. Like I was not big at all.
Okay. That's
So
good.
yeah, we never really got any comments about big baby or anything. And I mean, 8'5" is big, but not like
It's not
crazy
that big,
big, like
but it's
not that
bigger than
big.
6 pounds, right?
Yes.
And like we want to talk about like so many people like are being told, "Oh my gosh, you're so big." Like, are you know, all these things. Don't let people get to you. Women
No.
of strength, like believe and understand that your body is going to make the right size baby.
Yeah, exactly. And
Right?
I mean, like, just because you're big doesn't mean your baby's big. Like, you could have lots of fluid, you know, it just could be how you're carrying. So, like,
Yep.
it's all so silly. And the
Our
ultrasounds are silly. Like,
torsos.
yeah, exactly. Like, if you have a shorter torso, you're gonna stick out further, which just makes
Yeah.
sense. But I weighed myself before and after birth just out of curiosity. So I had gained 18 pounds during pregnancy and I lost 16 of it with like,
Whoa.
yeah, with her coming out. So like 16
Ooh.
pounds of baby fluid, placenta, like
Yeah.
it's a lot.
That is a lot, and that's
Yeah.
amazing. Way to, you're like, people have a hard time bouncing back like that. You just bounced
Yeah.
back right after the baby's born. I also wanted to talk about HELLP syndrome a little bit because there are people who worry about it happening with future pregnancies. And you had mentioned earlier that your provider was like, well, you're at a low risk because it happened so late in pregnancy, right? And according to the Preeclampsia Foundation, so HELLP syndrome, it's HELLP. Okay, so there's two L's in this. And I don't even, is it hemolysis?
Hemolysis.
Hemolysis. I'm like, I never know how to say that. Elevated liver enzyme levels. So that pain that she was describing in the very beginning is her liver. You guys, it's her liver, right? So anyway, so we've got symptoms of like blurry vision, pain or sharpness in that right upper middle part of the belly, headache, and she kind of mentioned it was on her right side, but like headache that will not go away despite all efforts. And these are things common, like preeclampsia, like headache, blurry vision, right? Overall not feeling well, fatigue, like sweats. I had a client, I've only had one client that had help, but she would night sweat. She would like wake up and she's like, I just was so wet and then I feel yucky. Like this was
I
this
had a
was
lot of
really
that in the recovery of HELLP syndrome. Like I was
yeah.
very sweaty at night.
Very, very sweaty at night. Yeah. Super nauseated that continues to just get worse. Nosebleeds, kind of a weird thing, but that can be a symptom. And that like have a hard time stopping or like keeps coming, like you keep getting nosebleeds. Seizures, right? Seizures are like the last and
Yeah, the
very
major one.
serious, yeah, and weight gain, swelling. But according to Preeclampsia Foundation, women who have had HELLP syndrome in previous pregnancies have a 2 to 19% of getting it again. Okay, so pretty low, 2 to 19%. That's
Quite the range.
really low. Yeah, women who experience HELLP before 29 weeks of gestation in their first pregnancy may have an even higher risk, though. So where your provider was like, it was at 41 weeks, you had a lot lower risk. So just know that if you've had HELLP syndrome, could you get it again? Yes. Will you get it again? Maybe, but your chances are lower, right?
Yeah.
Unless they're earlier on.
And there are
And
like a lot of precautionary things you can do to prevent it.
that's what I was just going to say. So we can talk about that. Like if you've had HELLP syndrome, I mean, even just like preeclampsia, but what are some things you said? You mentioned aspirin. What are some other things that you did to try and avoid it in future
So,
pregnancies?
as I mentioned, like I'm a very active person. So, obviously, like a healthy lifestyle in general is going to help. But then, like, we did a lot of extra, like, urinary tests, blood work, because like even if you have no symptoms, it can still show up in those tests. So like maybe if we had done blood work for me or a urine sample, like we would have known ahead of time. But like those were the only ones that I really did to help prevent it. And then I checked my blood pressure twice a day at home, which was like excessive, but with all the
I don't
pressure
think it.
from my
Yeah.
providers, I just felt like I should.
I think it's warranted for sure
Yeah.
to
And
check it.
it was a good way to monitor, like sometimes, it would go up slightly, so you'd be like cautious, and then if it went back down, you were like, okay, it's fine. It was just a one-off sort of thing. But yeah, and this, like I said, this pregnancy too, I did all of those things other than the tests. Like I took the
Yes.
aspirin, I stayed healthy, I made sure I was like well hydrated the whole pregnancy.
Yes,
And
I
then I
say
really just like,
hydration.
yes, that's a big one. Something I struggle with on a regular
It
basis,
is
but
hard.
it
Yeah.
is. Yeah.
I know. That's why I mean I struggle. I'm not even pregnant.
Yeah.
That's why I love our Needed, like my hydration little packets from our Needed partner. And it's just it helps me because it's hydration is so hard, but
It is.
hydrate, make sure that you're watching out for those symptoms. If you've had it, don't hesitate to call your provider and or take charge, right, of your care. Thank you so much again for sharing your beautiful stories. I really appreciate you so much. I think, I don't know, I'm trying to think if we've had a free birth, like an intentional free birth.
You've had one and I
Have we
listened to
had
it. It
one?
was Ashley
Okay.
Winning.
Oh, duh. Yes. Of
Yeah.
course.
She was the
Yes.
first one I'd ever heard of a free birth. And then I found Free
Yes.
Birth Society after that.
Yes, yes,
So
yes,
she kind
yes.
of like
Oh my God,
started me down this
Ashley.
path.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, she's so great. And she's in
She is.
Australia.
Yeah.
So definitely someone to listen to for sure. Hey, well, thank you so much and congrats.
Thank
And we'll
you.
talk to you later.
Thank you so much for having me. This was like a dream come true in so many ways.
Oh, it makes me so happy that you're here. And remember, if you're looking for a doula, go find her. Her link will be on today's episode.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to the vbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to the vbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.